This is Shep talking fishing on air back here on News Talk 1400 WOND.
Hey, Rocco, you did call earlier today, didn't you?
Hello, guys.
Yeah, how you doing? I asked you to call earlier last week, and you did.
Well, it was Christmas and all that. I had a birthday. I got 1 year older, almost as old as you guys. So,
oh, you dirty rat.
Is it okay if I talk dirty this morning real quick?
No, we got that 30-second bleeper on you.
Well, I just want to say the word spoils. That's the dirty word of the morning, spoils. And if you were paying attention, and I know you were, Ocean City has been doing some lagoon dredging. They've been trying to figure out a place to put all their spoils. It looks as if Middle Township is not going to take their spoils, word of the morning. Yeah. And I also wanted to let you know that I know that Bucktail Willie, Mr. Shillingford, will enjoy knowing that Brigantine has given a plaque to Mr. Frank Lobiondo, the outgoing congressman, who's done a lot of good work. But at the same time, he's also a big man who got a lot of congressional monies, federal monies for dredging and beach building. And Brigantine gave him a plaque for a North End Brigantine Beach that always erodes. So that is the dredging and spoils news of the morning.
Okay. Rocco?
The reason I brought up, quote-unquote, dirty word called spoils, everybody else wants to call it something more benign, something more softer, dredge materials. We don't want to call it spoils. But I wanted to get Bill's take on this game of dredging, pumping, shoaling, back in the channels, dredging again, finding a spoils location, because as you probably know, Ocean City needs to find a place for their spoils, and Middle Township said, no way, Jose. They're even trying to find a place behind Margate and Ventnor, something called Shelter Island. The city of Margate is hoping that they can use that big hole back there in the back bays. Maybe Bill can explain exactly what's the pros and cons of digging out these back bay islands and using it to build up other parts of the barrier islands, and then coming back decades later and filling these holes in with the so-called spoils?
Well, you know, I don't know about digging out holes to put the spoils in, but in the past, in years past, before we, I don't want to get in trouble, but before we got too much involved with the protecting the environment, you know, the dredging took place and we built islands on the mud banks. And you go up and down the coast, you'll see piles of spoils, and they're full of wildlife.
Yeah,
I've got one there behind Strathmere's that's got deer in it every year. Okay,
yep.
But building those kind of spoils, building a mountain of that sand that we're dredging will increase the wildlife, and you'll see everything from eagles to seagulls to deer and I don't understand why they can't continue to do that when they're looking for places to put the spoils. Now they're looking for, you know, in the case of Middle Township, they're looking to put the spoils off their waterways into a gravel pit, what basically was a sand pit, but it doesn't make any sense to me. Keep it where it belongs.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, but they don't want wildlife, Bill.
Well, that's something.
We had
that.
A deer in Margate, an animal control. There were complaints, so they shot it.
Oh,
it was named Bucky.
Yeah.
The environmentalists don't want wildlife.
I don't think we're going to change this. The momentum to hide the sand that they're pulling out. It's sand and mud for sure.
Yeah.
But with, you know, our waterways are getting shallowed out because of beach replenishment.
Sure, filled up.
The beat goes on. It's not going to change.
Yeah. Great Egg Inlet is really looks terrible sometimes at low water. It looks like if the sandbar goes all the way across there somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
I know it doesn't, but it looks like white sometimes. Hi, this is Shep talking fishing on the air, covering South Jersey from Fort Disky to Long Beach Island and offshore.
Talking about that slot fish, that's pretty cool.
Those meetings, I think, are a little less than exciting.
I'll be very surprised if New Jersey gets a slot fish.
The opportunity
for a slot fish has been opened up now.
Sure,
the ASFC had the opportunity, but they're only out 3 miles. But now with this last meeting in December, the Mid-Atlantic authorized the look at a slot fish.
Good.
So, you know, it's a possibility, but given I don't have a lot of confidence in New Jersey going in that direction.
I asked this question last week, but let me ask it again. What exactly is a slot fish? What does it mean precisely?
Well, if you look at Florida, you know, look at some of the other states, you're allowed three fish, and two of them could be between, in Flounder, two of them could be between 16 and 18 inches, and you could have one over 18. Or you could have, you know, if you had four fish, two and two. But, you know, if you think about it, the commercial guys, they're able to keep 16-inch fish.
Yeah.
14-inch fish.
14, actually. Yeah.
And, you know,
it's amazing.
Actually, it is. They prefer the 14 to 18-inch fish. If you look at it, you go down to the fish markets and look at the fillets that are there.
That's what they are. Yeah.
You're getting the smaller fish. Yeah. And but the commercial guys are controlled much better. I mean, you got to get in this argument all the time about the commercial guys are taking all the fish.
I have a couple people hammering me.
They're controlled. Every fish has got to be accounted for. Yeah. Are there some illegal guys out there? Yeah, I'm sure there are.
Yeah.
But the
right next to the striped bass guys 10 miles out, right?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable,
before
too.
Before a flounder can go to the market, to the wholesale market, it's got to be identified. It's got to be tagged. They got to be recorded. Yeah. They got to have a record of it. Yeah. And on the recreational side, they can't seem to come up with a way to keep track of what the commercial recreational guys are catching. But the problem is not commercial fishing. I'm gonna argue that till I might die in breath.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. You know, some people like to get striped bass. Some people like me, I like to go for kingfish and small. Back in the day, weakfish was my second favorite.
Back in the day,
right? Yeah.
We might see a startup of the weakfish
come back,
in the next couple of years.
Yeah,
if you look at the pattern since, and I did this, several months ago. Look at the pattern of weakfish from the 30s all the way through, and there's the cyclical, pattern.
You're right.
Is between 6 and 8 years.
Yeah,
and you know what, well, we've been down. We've been down like 6 years now since.
Yeah.
And the those big monsters that we had in the Delaware Bay, that whole strain got wiped out by those big,
sure,
two big boats in Cape May.
Yeah,
the population will come back, but it comes back a little bit slower because we've had the small fish off the coast every year.
You're right,
but they don't seem to come back. I got in an argument the other day with somebody saying striped bass are eating them all. Striped bass couldn't eat all the weak fish. You know? It's impossible. But you know, if you look at over the last 60, 70 years, there's a clear pattern of what happens to weakfish.
Yeah. Sea bass and flounder are more likely to eat the small weakfish than stripers, wouldn't you, say? Because they kind of hang together more than that? Yeah.
And they seem to be doing pretty well with this year with the weakfish in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And that's a good sign.
Good deal.
Know? The interesting thing is, you know, that the striped bass, when they winter off of North Carolina, they're further offshore than they've ever been.
Really?
Because the commercial guys used to net them from the beach.
Yeah. Okay?
But the last 2 years, they've had a terrible...
I've seen them do that. They take a boat out and they pull the net behind them.
And then
like three blocks down, they bring that back and just haul it in. Yeah.
My cousin used to do that.
And the argument gets to be why they're not close to shore like they used to be. And my point is that the population is way down.
Yeah.
We just don't have as large a population of striped bass as we have in the past.
This beach replenishment can be doing it too.
This
beach replenishment can be doing it too.
Shoving them off the beach in North Carolina, though, you don't have a lot of that down there. Not like you have up here.
If these two fish are from down there, whatever they're eating, the bass would be down there eating that too. I mean, there's got to be a lot of bait fish.
I got a captain on the line, Mark Schrenk.
Had to run pretty far offshore. 225 feet of water. That's where they are this time of year. And it's getting toward the end of the season, so they're stacked up pretty thick out there. And we had just awesome fishing. You know, from the minute we got there to the minute we left, we had our limit by 11 o'clock.
When you say they're stacked up this time of the year, what are you saying? Were they kind of huddling together?
They move offshore and they move down from up north, and they start to find these wrecks and rock piles and things offshore in deep water. The sea bass have pretty much vanished inside of 20 fathoms. There's very few of them in there, so this time of year you have to chase them further out. We had some up in the 4 or 5 pound range, You know, but most of them you didn't even have to think about measuring. And if you wanted to stay and call some smaller ones out, you would have kept more larger ones. But I'm not too thrilled about the, you know, potential mortality of releasing fish. So I'd rather keep the legal ones and leave rather than try to release them, because many of them don't go back down. And I'm not, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, that swim bladder that pops out, right? Yeah.
I'm not so sure about the survival rate. So I just, you know, I'd like to get our number and leave and not keep calling through them.
Don't they have that program where if you like they have a needle that kind of aerates that and then it makes it?
Florida does.
Yeah, and then it makes it greater possibility for them to survive when you release.
It's really prevalent in Florida. They push it down there a lot. There's a lot of a lot of that going on in Florida with deep water fish, and you pop the air bladder and supposedly they go back down. But I'm always suspect of that. Whenever you puncture a fish or poke it someplace or damage it, I just don't know about the mortality. So I'd rather not take the chance and leave some for next year. We do some fluke fishing out there, and fluke fishing has been tough in the ocean for tourists and families. The last 10, 15 years, if you're not fishing structure, if you're not losing rigs, you're not catching keeper fluke.
Yeah.
So that's been difficult for us, you know, around South Jersey here. It's different in maybe North Jersey, but if you're not losing rigs here, you're not catching fish. And that's really difficult for non-fishermen. So that's a little bit of a struggle. And, you can pick a few sea bass up doing that. But the sea bass aren't on the wrecks in the middle of the summer the way they were years ago. So it's a little bit of a challenge. But we can usually find something to put a bend in the rod in the middle of the summer. And then as the fall comes along, we target striped bass.
That we appreciate your stewardship of the mortality fish, and would hope that we have a couple comment periods coming up with Mid-Atlantic and Atlantic States on 2019 regs. Would really appreciate your sentiments expressed in comments to those bodies coming up here. I know I have an advisory panel meeting in February, and Bill would probably be better apprised as when those comment periods are. But you were well-versed in that, and we'd appreciate you putting that down in writing and getting it to them as we lobby for a slot fish for exactly those reasons.
Sure. Sounds good.
All right.
A slot fish or two in summer flounder.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, I think we should. I mean, again, I'm not a scientist, but I think we should be taking the small fish and leaving the large fish to breed. And you know, that's the way we control the deer herd.
Yeah, I like it.
We call the males, and we let the females live if we want a strong herd, and the opposite if you don't. So it's, I'm not a scientist, but supposedly all the big flounder are females.
You're a better scientist, Mark, just with what you said, than most of them out there. So don't ever get it. You can pat yourself on the back.
Help me out, Robin. Give
it's
me
a stewardship of the fishery.
How about dogfish, Robin? Dogfish are invasive. What's your understanding of the absolute bloom of dogfish? You can't drop a bait during striped bass season and not catch a spiny dog.
So you think they're invasive? Is that what you called them? Is that what you just said? Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. We used to be able to drop clams or bunker or an eel or a spot on the lumps off of the beach here and just drift and, pick a striper here, a striper there, just drifting and dreaming. It was great. But now if you drop a bait to the bottom in the last 5 or 6 years, any kind of bait to the bottom, even diamond jigs, the dogfish jump on it. You just can't bait fish during striped bass season. I mean, it's really noticeable, the increase in spiny dogs here. And do you have any information about that, Rob? Do you if that's attributed to any of the species weakness or disappearing over the years?
Well, it's it has been suggested that they've been packaged in pint containers and salted and, be permissible to be sold as a strip bait because they are effective that way. But I'll defer to Bill as far as their migratory patterns and why we have a gazillion of them now.
Well, one thing that happened is that they cut back on the allocation about, 4 or 5 years ago, maybe 6. They cut way back on the allocation because they said too many the females were being removed. And the population exploded. This past year, I think they increased the poundage that they can take. I mean, there's a big commercial fishery for dogfish.
Mm-hmm.
But because they were cut back, they didn't.
Well, is it table fare or is it for bait?
Huh?
Is it table fare for dogfish?
Table, yeah. Really? The Europeans eat it all the
fish
time.
Fish and chips.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that goes to the Europeans. It also goes for cat food.
basically anything that's labeled whitefish, you know,
could be close. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Could be close.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But the, you know,
okay.
when they
continuing education.
When they identified the stock as being way down, they miscalculated, and you know the stock tips kept growing. And when they finally realized how big the stock got, like well, I think it was 2 years ago, they increased it, and they increased it again this year. But they could increase it again, given the population that's out there.
Bill, did they actually admit that they miscalculated?
No, they don't admit
it. I was going to say, because why can't we get them to admit that they've miscalculated flounder? Good grief.
No, their argument is, well, the stock's improving. So they, you know, but they never miscalculate.
All right. Well, is anyone aware of a natural predator for a dogfish? Because that seems to cause things to be out of balance. If the natural predators disappear, then the population might explode also. But I don't know really what kind of a natural predator would eat those things instead of, except possibly, you know, aggressive toothy sharks.
Do
they know what
other sharks?
Yeah.
Other sharks, right? Yeah.
I don't know of any.
They say in the state of New Jersey, if you swim or fish or anything to that nature, you're within 7 feet of any shark.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, you know when the population of any fish, whether it's sharks or stripers or whatever, when the population is up, the population inshore grows, and the fish keep coming closer inshore because that's where they're looking for food.
Yeah.
When the population is down, like I'm going to argue that the striped bass population is down, the fish are further offshore. The population isn't as great. They're going further offshore for food.
Well, are they coming in to go up the rivers? I mean, they're still spawning in the rivers. That pattern hasn't changed. Right?
No. But they don't come into the rivers until maybe early February.
Yeah,
believe it or not, they're already catching them in the river here.
Oh yeah,
they're starting to come in through.
They're in the river all winter.
Yeah. Let's throw a couple of wind turbines in within 2.5 miles. We'll never see a striped bass within 3 miles.
Mark, what do you think about this wind turbine and having more places to go fishing?
I think any kind of structure is a good thing for us. I look at the Gulf of Mexico, look at all the rigs down there, and I mean, it's just, you know, it's vibrant. There's life around every rig down there. So I'm not opposed to structure.
Mark, the only thing is that as we've delved into the experience that they have up in Rhode Island and everything, they are deadly to the fish population. The Bureau of Public Utilities has been selling us a bill of goods on structure and all that type of thing. They actually have a 600-megawatt cable that will mess with the navigation of ships and the shipping lanes. They killed off 50% of the cod embryos off of Rhode Island. I could go on and on and on. But
really?
the surface information, like any issue that would like to be pushed through, they're not conservation-oriented. For every kilowatt that's generated from a wind farm, there's a kilowatt of gas that's needed in order to generate that. So it actually is wasteful. But, you know, we'll be doing more on that to get the correct information out, because right now I think we're being...
Mark, I kind of felt like you did. I wasn't against it because of the history and, like, the Gulf of Mexico and all that kind of stuff. But Robin and other people researched it a little bit more, and I'm starting to wonder now about, you know, what the effects are. Let's put it that way.
The Gulf of Mexico is not wind.
It's oil.
They're oil. And you don't have...
It's not the same thing.
It's totally different.
Yeah.
It's totally different.
Yeah,
the continuing noise and the, I mean, not even the seismic stuff that goes on ahead of time, because I think they said they don't even have to do seismic testing off of New Jersey. They managed to pass that, but the continuing noise underwater and the, it actually kills sharks, right whales, sea turtles, you know, and they haven't even studied the migratory patterns of fish. Mm-hmm. Bill knows more about the migratory patterns than any research that's been done on these things.
Yep.
What's killing the fish, Robin? The noise?
Noise, and my understanding is the
Electrical currents.
Electrical currents. Yeah. I mean, that's a lot. 600-megawatt cable.
Magnetic radiation.
If it's strong enough to mess with the navigational systems of ships, then what does it do to fish?
That's going to be a topic for us coming up here after the first of the year. Robin has brought these facts up that maybe not everybody is aware of, so we're going to investigate.
There are a lot
more
of people that have done a lot of research that would
you've been
information.
I know, it's cool.
The Marine Council, New Jersey Marine Council meeting, will be meeting the first Thursday after the New Year's in Galway at 5 o'clock.
January 3rd.
And, you know, whether there's – we may get a preliminary look at where flounder's going to go from the state of New Jersey or what they're going to ask for.
Yeah.
A real fisherman, you know, voicing their opinion. And if you don't – my opinion, if you don't voice your opinion, don't complain.
Shame on you.